energy efficiency.
More than just getting you to change a light bulb.
Climate change.
Renewable energy.
This is what the U.S. has committed. This is what the EU has committed for 2020.
What can I do about it?
This week, as the Copenhagen Climate Summit kicks off, we're taking a closer look at what needs to be done in the real world to change the future of our environment, what's working and what is not. Today's subject is California. They've decided they're not going to wait to see what happens in Copenhagen. Instead, as a state, they've negotiated their own international climate partnerships, and they put in place some changes that are more expansive than those being considered by some nations. Ingrid Lobetz joins us. She's the West Coast Bureau Chief for Living on Earth, and she's been following California's environmental efforts. Good morning, Ingrid.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
We just heard a report coming out of California that was not good news. Can you tell us what was included in that report?
Yeah, the most recent report, and I have to say we have a lot of these here in California, shows that temperatures are going to be rising in parts of the state that are already pretty difficult to live in for some people. It's going to become unbearable. And we're talking about the future that people who are alive today are going to live to see 2050, possible 9-degree rise by 2100, a possible 5-degree rise, I should say, by 2050. So the state's looking at what can we do to adapt to this. They're not there yet, but they're starting to look at it.
So two issues here. Arnold Schwarzenegger, the governor of California, has said, first of all, we need to have a plan B to plan for what we do if we can't stop climate change. But California has also instituted some pretty drastic measures, including the international ones, all the way down to the size of televisions to try and cope with this.
That's right, and this is really a continuation of things that California has been doing for many years, starting with air pollution concerns, but now focused on climate change. A lot of people are unaware that California is living under a hard carbon cap, and what that actually means is that it's forcing a reexamination of all the industry in the state, everything from how you refine gasoline to how you manufacture cement, all the way down to how you formulate hairspray and whether you can still go to the store and buy refrigerant when your car's air conditioned. Fails.
Well, Governor Schwarzenegger had decided that probably one of the easiest ways to combat climate change was getting people to stop cutting down trees. So he bypassed the federal government altogether and went and made his own deal with Brazil.
That's right. He invited governors from the most forested and deforested states in Brazil and also from Indonesia here for the second year in a row. And while they can't really negotiate treaties exactly because they're governors and that could be a little touchy for their national governments, what they can do is put significant pressure on their national governments to come to agreements to curb deforestation. And it lets those national governments know in the U.S., Indonesia, and Brazil, hey, listen, if you don't get on board with this, you're going to be politically upstaged.
Could this be a game plan for the other states across the country or for the federal government?
Indeed. I think that the rules, which are very technical and kind of boring, but they are absolutely necessary if you're going to live under a hard carbon limit that are being worked out in California, are intended as a national blueprint. And there's evidence that Congress is looking very closely at that blueprint, yes.
Okay. Ingrid Lobet is the West Coast Bureau Chief for Living on Earth. She joined us from Los Angeles. We now have Tony Brunello. He's California's Deputy Secretary for Energy and Climate Change. He's on the phone with us. Secretary Brunello, you've been a part of the international climate negotiations, and you know what happens actually behind these closed doors at conferences like they're going on, that are going on in Copenhagen. So tell us, what's really happening in Copenhagen?
It's always important for people to remember that going to these UN events is sort of like going to any state or the country's legislature, where what they're doing is really developing different policies and things that, when you really look at the wording, it becomes quite boring. So what you have when we go there is the same thing at the United Nations events there at Copenhagen. So they'll probably have, there's probably about 400 people representing all the nations of the world who are negotiating the next climate change treaty. And so each of those countries is trying to figure out what's the best solution for them. Everyone else that comes, and it sounds as though at Copenhagen there could be up to 25 or 30,000 people, more than they've ever seen. I'd say a lot of the people are all stakeholders from all different walks of life, and so a lot of those people help those people who are negotiating the treaties. A lot of them are just there to witness the event and just to learn more. So it's like a huge trade fair. So those internal meetings are the ones that are really trying to work towards developing language and negotiations for an ultimate next step for a treaty.
You have some serious climate problems in California, and we've gotten recent reports on California's climate with your governor encouraging the state to make a plan B in case climate change cannot be averted or stopped. And I'm wondering, to what extent can an international conference like Copenhagen end up having an effect or helping you in what you do in your own state?
Again, a great question. I think, you know, what we're doing here in California is looking at two things. One is how to reduce greenhouse gas emissions, and that's necessary that we do it here in California and as you guys as you're doing in New York as well as around the globe, because we have to reduce our overall greenhouse gas emissions that will eventually reduce climate impacts. But even with the greenhouse gases that we have in the atmosphere right now, we know that they're going to be there for at least a century and will cause significant impacts. So the other thing that we're doing is really preparing for those impacts. We know that sea level rise could rise almost 5 to 10 times what we've seen. Temperatures are going to significantly increase. And most important for us in California, as most people know, our politics is water. And we're looking at losing about 80% of our snowpack in the next century. And what that means is major water ramifications for how we store water, how we transfer water from the north to the south, major political issues that are really where some of the fiercest battles are in the state. So both reducing greenhouse gases as well as preparing for those impacts of the state are where we're going.
We're talking about changes you're trying to make in California to reduce greenhouse gas emissions. And at the same time, on the other hand, we've been talking about California's enormous deficit. How difficult is it to reconcile these two together? Can you fund green projects when you're short on cash?
I wish I had a crystal ball. I would not say that our whole process has been clean, and definitely financially has been difficult. But really, we've already made a commitment. I think we've already seen some of the significant financial inflows in the state from the private sector that still think California is the right place to invest in. And so we definitely know we have our budgetary issues, and we'll have to address those. But really, the wave of the future is clean technology and renewable energy, and that's where we're going.
Well, good luck. Tony Brunello is California's Deputy Secretary for Energy and Climate Change. You know, clean technology is what President Obama is betting on in order to create jobs. And I got to say, John, I saw a report. There's a new study coming out of California showing that green jobs grew at a rate of like 36%, while everything else grew at a rate of like 9%. So maybe so.
Well, I guess my question for someone like Brunello is, how do you measure progress and stuff like that? He makes a lot of agreements, but the question really for Copenhagen is, how do you measure progress on climate change and enforce the progress that you make?
That's the real question. Once they leave Copenhagen, then what do they do? What's the next step after that to make sure people are complying with the agreements they've reached? Tomorrow, we're going to stay in Scandinavia, where Obama heads to Copenhagen for the talks, and going on to Oslo to pick up his Nobel Prize. Tune in tomorrow for that.
And if you missed anything, we're always on here at The Takeaway. Take our podcast to go. You can subscribe at thetakeaway.org. Reach us at 877-8-MY-TAKE. You can email your comments at mytake@thetakeaway.org. We've been talking jobs. You've given us lots of suggestions on how to create jobs. President Obama has his own plan. But Marguerite emails, what we need is a huge public works and human services job creation program on the order of the New Deal. Yes, we'll have temporary deficits, but people who are working and earning pay taxes and are able to make purchases and pay their rent or mortgages. Again, tell us your take at 877-8-MY-TAKE or mytake@thetakeaway.org.
I'm Celeste Headlee.
And I'm John Hockenberry. This is The Takeaway.
Since WNYC's first broadcast in 1924, we've been dedicated to creating the kind of content we know the world needs. In addition to this award-winning reporting, your sponsorship also supports inspiring storytelling and extraordinary music that is free and accessible to all. To get in touch and find out more, visit sponsorship.wnyc.org.